Boker Tov, Shavua Tov, a sad looking California today. Maybe the daf is too early. Maybe Shabbos wasn't as restful as we hoped. Ay, ay, ay. All right, but Bezrat Hashem, by the time we get through this, we're going to be okay, especially with Ariel back and healthy again with us. That should give an extra boost. And, of course, Yitzi is missing, but he'll be back, hopefully. After all, Ariel's talking to someone or another. It's assuredly not with Sesame Street. Okay. All right, I think we've got enough folks here, and we're ready to begin. He's having trouble with the sound. You guys okay? All righty. So, Shavua Tov to those that just got out of Shabbos. And Boker Tov. And we are ready to get back to this fascinating sugya. We've moved into new territory, which is the territory of Hafarat Nedarim. We went through the entire parsha yesterday, almost the entire parsha yesterday, to clarify our understanding of the psukim. We came out with a fundamental approach, which was Rava's approach that we saw yesterday, according to which the Torah is discussing actually five separate situations. One situation being a child old enough to make a neder who's still in the reshus of the father. Another situation is where that child is now an arusa, but she's still bevet avia. And in that case, as opposed to the first case, we need both the orus and the av to be mefer, and the hafara can deal with the dorim that existed before while she was still in the reshus of the av. The third case, I'm not going in the order of the psukim, but in order of the events. The third case would be a woman who actually is married completely, so she's a nesua, and in that case, the Baal can be mefer. However, the father, of course, has no rights whatsoever, and the Baal is mefer if he is dealing with, as the pasuk insists, of la'anos nefesh, things that are painful. That's all that we've seen so far. I'm not saying that's the end of the story. We had the situation in which this woman becomes a grusha, or she becomes an almana. And then the question is, from which point would she have become a grusha or an almana? If it's already at the point where she was fully married, so then she's considered to have no one in her life that could possibly be mefer. But we have another situation in which a woman might become a grusha and an almana after erusin. And in that case, as we spoke about yesterday, we have a concept of nisrokna rishus la'av. The rishus goes back to the father, and the father is able to be mefer. These were the beautiful analyses of the psukim done by Rabba, and it left us very clear that the Torah is telling us a new situation when it uses the words vim hayotiye le'ish unedorea aleha. That tells us both the din of kodmim, which is a dorei aleha, and it's talking about the need for both the father by using the vav of the ve'im hayotiyeh. It's a continuation of the reshus of the father based on the way that the psukim is structured, namely that the pasuk first discusses the rights of the father instead of suddenly presenting them to us in the context of the baal. So therefore it's telling us father has complete reshus before, father maintains reshus with the vav afterwards, and that since in this case he's made for bekodmim, it's clear that it's not fundamentally the rights of the Baal and the father just given the rights of protesting, which is Kiyom. No, it's actually the rights of the father and the Baal. And this is indicated also that we're talking about that interim case of Erisin by the very usage of the words im hayotiyeh. Since the Lashon of Havaya is a classic reference to Kiddushin or Erisin, and is not the general way that we would refer to the second stage of Nisuin, then it's all very, very clear. There's these key words, Hayoti Yeh, there's these key words, Nidorea Aleha, there's these key words of Beit Isha Nadara, put it all together, and we end up with an understanding of the entire Parsha. That was Rabba's approach. Today, on Daf Samaches, we're going to start with a new possibility, completely new approach, in which the closing words of the parsha, which we never got up to, we didn't mention yesterday, the closing words, which are Ela hachukim asher tziva Hashem et Moshe bein ish leishto bein av levito bin ureha beit aviha. Is that not a very confusing pasuk? I mean, if you would have said Ela hachukim bein ish leishto, I mean, then I could have said the words bin ureha beit aviha? Of course not. So if you're telling me bein av lebito bin ureha beit aviha, is the words bin ureha beit aviha going back on the bein ish leishto? Or is it only going on the latter piece? Which is a very strange way of saying things. These are the dinim between a man and his wife, and between a father and a daughter, assuming that she is still a nahara. But the part about assuming she's still a nahara has nothing to do with the thing between a man and a wife. You must admit, it's clumsy. Therefore, tain is the veir bishmal. The whole point of this pasuk is to tell me that the state of binurea beit aviha is a combination of ben ish leishto ben av levito. That's the meaning of the pasuk. So, otherwise, what's the idea? What are we saying? Ela chukim asher. I know how to read. Why repeat the essential dinim that you just said? So brilliantly, Tainez Devei Rabbi Shmuel, if the Torah says this, it means that there is a new state, a state of bin ureha beit aviha while there is a ben ish leishto. Where would that be? Certainly after Nisuin, when there's true ben ish leishto, there is no bin ureha beit aviha, because the marriage to somebody else cancels bin ureha beit aviha, right? Therefore, we must say that we're talking about prior to a complete Nisuin, and we're talking about an Erisin, and in the case of an Erisin, we need access to both the ish leishto and the av lebito, both of whom are benefiting from the fact that she is binurea beit aviha. In what sense? In the sense that the Baal can be mefer bekodmin, which he would not be able to do if he was the sole individual who was given the rights to her nedarim. Aha. Now that's a completely different approach. It seems to be a sufficient approach in and of itself. The Torah is specifically saying that the situations that we spoke about earlier, in which there's a din of a father being mefer and another din of a Baal being mefer, that those two come together in a third state, which is the binurea beit aviha of the closing pasuk of Ela Chukim. The problem, of course, is that leaves all of the psukim that have to do with ve'ima yoti ela yishu nedorea, etc., etc. It leaves them hanging there, according to the Devei Rabbi Shmuel, without any particular purpose. Because if I would have just learned the psukim of hafarata av, coupled with hafarata bal, in a pure state, pure srishas of av before even erison, pure nisuin without discussing erison, and now you add this third mixture of binurea beit aviha, in which he is both ben ish leishto and ben av levito, that gives me all the information. So what is the point, according to the Devei Rabbi Shmuel, of the entire middle parsha, which was the whole focus of Rabba's drasha? This is the Gemara's next kash, of course. Let's see this inside. So Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel, ben ish leishto ben av levito, mikan lenahara ha'mu'urasa sha'avia u'ba'ala mefirin nidareha. But if that's the case, well, the Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel, what in the world do we do with the whole parsha of Ve'im Hayoti? By the way, the missing Vav is a terrible, terrible mistake in the Girsa, because, I mean, the whole point of Rabba's Drasha was built around that Vav. So, okay, what do we do with Ve'im? That's why, of course, the Bach reinserts it. Ve'im Hayoti Yele'ish. So what does he do with this? Mayavidle. Actually, we're going to see that Rabba himself, who was the one who darshaned everything that we learned last night, that Rabba himself uses the pasuk of Imayoti Ela Ish to tell me a completely different halacha later on. And that, says the Devei Rabbi Shmuel, is a sufficient excuse for that pasuk. So he uses it, Le'idach the Rabba. It should say Rabbah here, of course, because the first Maimer was entirely Rabbah's. He uses this for the other din of Rabbah. What's the other din of Rabbah? Brilliant. Listen to this. Im hayotiyeh also means, yes, I don't need the two hayos, do I? Hayotiyeh, to tell me the interim step of Erisin. One havaya is quite enough. So what does this mean? She got two diamond rings? I mean, what's the hayotiyeh? Ah, says Rabbah. What it means is she's gone through two Erisins. How did that happen? Well, either the first one was broken off through the husband's divorce, or the first one was broken off through the husband's death, and now she finds a new boyfriend. And now there's an Erisin to number two. Hayotiyeh teaches us so beautifully that her status prior to the first Erisin and her status prior to the second Erisin is exactly the same. Which means what? It means, as Gavi is about to write down, it means Meita Baal Nitrokna Rishut Lahav. Everything that originally had been given to the Baal and it had been lost to the husband, to the father, namely, that the father was no longer responsible individually and empowered individually to take care of her nedarim. When the Baal, who was not a full Baal but an Oros, dies or divorces, the father inherits back everything that had been given to the Baal. Huh? Hayotiyeh. Isn't that marvelous? So therefore, both states of Erisin are exactly the same insofar as what happened before them. So in both cases, the father was individually empowered to take care of all of her nedarim. By the way, this raises a fascinating question, which would be the elements that was taken from the father. Think about this. What happened when there was the Erisin? The husband, or Oros, suddenly gets the right to be mefer bekodmim. Now, how do we understand that? The hafara bekodmim isn't given to a husband, but it is given to an oros in the presence of the ab, right? But what does that mean? That means that to some extent, part of the powers of the ab were transferred to the oros. Can that part be viewed as something that is given back to the father afterwards? That is to say, the kodmin part, if the Baal as a Baal never had a right to it in the first place, and it was only being done by the shutafut of the Av, can the Av get involved in something that he then needed the Baal as a shutafut in terms of kodmin? We're going to see more about that later. But in any event, the pashtus of Rabbah's drasha is that no matter what the situation, things go back to the way that they were. Okay? Now, according to Rabbah, now note that that does not affect Rabbah's original drasha in any way. In other words, the ima yotiyeh is in no way a challenge to Rabbah's understanding that ayotiyeh means after Erisin. It's just adding an additional piece. That if there were two Erisins, then that reflects on her prior status as a Binurei Beit Aviyah, right? So according to Rabbah, he can maintain both of these drushes from the same pasuk without any problem. Drusha number one, ve'imayotiyeh, means that Aviyah ve'arusa are mefirin together nidoreha. And drusha number two is that in the event that the Oros dies, Nisrok and Rishus la'av. Now, the question, of course, is, we haven't explained what Rabbah does with the strange closing of the parsha of Ela HaChukim, Bein Av Lebito, which is compared to Bein Ish LeIshto, Binurei HaBeit Aviyah, which seems to suffice all on its own to tell me this new halacha of Anarusa, Anaraha Me'urasa. So what does he do with that? How does he explain the fact that the Torah put all of that into a separate pasuk which closes the entire parsha with a bang, Ela HaChukim? So Verabba, Haidatana Devei Rabbi Shmuel Mayavidle. What does he do with the closing pasuk? Ah, he says, note the lashon of the pasuk, which we've never seen before. It says, bein ish le'ishto. So now that bein tells us something new. Never said anything about that before. It never said that the neder is going to have an impact on the relationship. Beino leveina, does it? It only talked about the dorim la'anot nafesh. And that was a big chiddush. La'anot nafesh, that where does the Baal get a reshus? We haven't really gotten to that, but we mentioned it in passing yesterday, that the extra words la'anot nefesh in the parsha of im beit isha nadara comes to tell me that don't think that a Baal gets rights to all nadarim. Oh, no. The Baal only gets rights to nadarim that are going to affect her health and are bad for her, and that's la'anot nefesh, that it's going to cause her pain. There he has a right to be mefer. This adds, says Rabbah, this extra pasuk is not an extra pasuk at all. It opens up a new halacha, namely, that if she made a neder that affects the relationship with her husband, then there's a new halacha, that a husband is allowed to be made for, and is empowered to be made for a neder, which is beino leveina. Now this means that those two issues, usually people who just learn Hilchas Nedarim are not aware of the fact that those two issues could come from two completely different parshas and different ways of understanding Afara. Because when you read the halacha, you just read the bottom line. The bottom line is that a Baal can be mefer his wife's nedarim in the event that those are nidreinu nefesh, and in the event that those nedarim are going to affect the relationship. But the truth is that, as Rav is explaining to us now, those are two completely different parshas in the Torah. In one, the husband is given a right for nidreinu nefesh, and in the other, the husband is given a right for nedarim beino leveina. So now the question is, what does the Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel do? Well, I mean, there's no reason for us to say that the Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel wouldn't be able to learn this out of here. There's no contradiction between the fact that the Pasuk adds the word bein, or the fact that it puts together the Hafaras Ha'av with the Hafaras Ha'baal, right? So it's very possible that the Tana Rabbi Shmuel agrees completely with the issue, and nonetheless they could still use it. That's fine. So this is a chiddush, according to Rabbah, that is the only thing that we learn out of here is that the Baal is mefer. Now the question is, it also says bein av lebito. How does that affect the dinim of the Hafaras Ha'av? Now, this touches on the issue that we spoke about a few minutes ago. So, if you're going to talk about the word bein, then bein av levito should mean exactly the same thing that it means bein ish leishto. Now, you understand that, of course, affecting a relationship bein ish leishto is very different than affecting a relationship bein av levito, because the essence of bein ish leishto is the relationship, and that's the only thing that granted the right to the hafara. The fact that I use now the same lashon of bein av levito is a stretch to say that things that affect her, well, if she's going to make a neder that she's not allowed to bring you your slippers, your pipe, and your newspaper in the morning, that is going to affect her relationship with her father. No, big deal. I mean, is that in some way fundamentally nogea that din of hafaras nedarim? Says the Rambam, no. This halacha of limiting the nedarim, the hafaras nedarim of an av to this situation, that's not true. It only follows in the case where it has to do with the granting of the rights of hafara in the first place, you see? So bein ish leishto, yes, that is certainly part of the very rights of hafara. But when it comes to the father can actually be mefer these nedarim no matter what they are, whether they're ben av levito personally or they're not, and he doesn't agree that there's such a din. Now, that's fascinating because, as the Ran brings, there's a Beferish Yerushalmi, not to mention the Sifri, that says that ben av levito is actually a restriction on the rights of the father in exactly the same way that it's a restriction on the rights of the Baal. And the father cannot actually do a hafara on these things. Okay, so we have to understand what the Rambam does with the Sifri and with the Yerushalmi and why he paskins Bedafka that it isn't so. What is his source? Okay, so now we know this new brilliant halacha. And that is, there is a concept called a hafara that can be done only in tandem and that cannot have anything in between it, such as hakama, even though that hakama was uprooted through she'elav to a chacham, that nonetheless, there's no way to put it together. Okay, now we have a question of how does that work? What does it even mean? If somebody is mefer, he's mefer. If he can be mefer together with someone else, what does that mean? It's like a new force field? Do they have to be holding hands when they do that for him? Do they have to be saying it together? Whose das is mefer? What happens if one is mefer and the other one isn't mefer? And she goes ahead and she's overet on the neder. Now you'll notice that there's a separate Hashem Yislach La that is said in all three of these cases. So what exactly will Hashem Yislach La do in the event that only one out of the two was made for the neder? Now this leads us, and we began this discussion last night in which the Ran points out that there is a concept of weak hafara. Okay, and that was what we spoke about. The hafara without the other hafara is too weak to exist when there was that comma in between, as opposed to kedushin, where the act of kedushin exists, and now you're going to determine whether those nedarim were on her at the time of kedushin or not on her. That's how the Ran answered the question of why doesn't the she'ela to a chacham on hakama completely make it invisible, and it's as if it was never there, right? This next sugya is the basis of the Ran's entire, what appears to be a very, as they say in yeshiva, balabatish svara. That, you know, what do you mean weak in this? I mean, it doesn't sound at all Brisker-like, you know? Define your terms, man. What do you mean weak? How is hafara weak? Is it or isn't it? I mean, isn't that always the Brisker approach? To be or not to be? We can define what to be means, but we certainly can't say you have sort of a semi-existence. That's talking about mumbo jumbo. So what exactly is going on over here? Now, this Gemara introduces us to exactly that problem. But you remember, Nedarim is all about mumbo jumbo anyway. That's the point. And therefore, this Masechet introduces concepts that get into lomdisha discussion, or as they say in Yiddish, lomdisha rate, as opposed to clear-cut Brisker definitions. But that's to be expected when we get to Nedarim. So here the question is like this. How do we view the impact of a single hafara upon a neder which has two people that need to do the hafara? So there's two ways of looking at this. Either, let's say the Baal alone, or the husband alone. Let's say that only one did the hafara. What is the din? Is he Megis Gaius or is he Miklash Kolish? So, I think both of these terms are Gavi writing terms. So, Baal Megis Gaius, which of course doesn't mean only the Baal, it would mean also the Av, or Miklash Kolish, where one of a partnership that's empowered with hafara, one or the other, does the hafara, what impact would that have upon the neder? There's two ways of looking at it. It could weaken the neder so that each one weakens the neder in their own way, and in the end, the neder has no power. Or we could view the neder of existing in two parts. Why would we view the neder like that? Because, gentlemen, a Nara HaMa'urasa's psychology is in two parts. That's why. On the one hand, she's still her father's little girl. And she's been Urea Beit Aviyah, which is what the Torah is stressing. Since the entire element of Nedarim is psychological and virtual. Furthermore, this is so true, and this is mind-boggling, that in a case where a woman is married only midrabbana and makes a neder d'oraisa, the baal can still be made for the neder. Ask the Gemara, how the heck can a baal, as a d'rabbanan baal, be made for a neder, which is a d'oraisa? So as the Gemara puts it, and this is another Gavi, right? Isha al dat baala noderet. The woman always makes a neder, keeping in mind the fact, boy, my husband's going to be mad at me for this. And so she's not really fully committed if her husband doesn't go along with it, see? So that would mean, I mean, like, okay, what are we, Rabbi Shimon? We're darshaning time of the Krah, and we're saying this is what the Torah is telling us, that a woman is always thinking about her husband. I mean, all of a sudden, we're going to be paskening a davar pasha that we're darshaning time of the Krah. The point over here is an amazing one. It's that since the Torah has already opened us up to the fact that the psychology is a fundamental part of the nature of virtuality, which is rather obvious once you understand what that means, but it took thousands of years for people to really appreciate the impact, A, of psychology. Nobody even knew there was such a thing as psychology until fairly recently. And, you know, if you still, as I keep pointing out, you tell somebody from two generations ago you went to a psychiatrist, they'll look at you like you need a psychiatrist. So what is that exactly? But the fact is that putting together virtuality, which is even more recent to discovery, with psychology, you end up with an understanding that the Gemara had all along of the nature of a neder of a benu ureha beit avia, who also has a husband. So daddy's little girl is still daddy's little girl. She may not even know the facts of life at this point. She's going to get married. We'll tell her the bad news the night before. But the bottom line is, as far as she's concerned, she is daddy's little girl. So now her neder consists of two different psychologies and two different virtualities, which means that in giving the reshus to the husband and to the father, there are two ways of saying it. The neder might be the result of a single personality that is torn, or the neder might be the result of two different personalities that exist within her. So if we understand that the neder is, on the one hand, the neder of father's little girl, and on the other hand, the neder of hubby, then that would mean that each one of them is, in fact, taking off an entire neder off of one part of a psychology. So who cares? Asks the Gemara. I mean, it's all very nice theoretically if you're going for psychotherapy. I mean, but what difference does it make? So what are you asking? Hechakomi boy, this is a very strange question. Says the Gemara, what's this supposed to mean? No, I will give you a very concrete situation. The concrete situation is like this. She assers on herself two kizesim. Now, that means that we can actually split the neder into two completely independent nedarim, kizayit number one and kizayit number two. So kizayit number one is usher because she's daddy's little girl, and kizayit number two is usher because she is Mr. So-and-so's wife. When daddy cancels, he only cancels his kizayit. Or if hubby cancels, he only cancels his kizayit. So you'll say, but you don't know which kizayit is which. I don't need to know. Let's imagine a situation where only daddy canceled, and she eats both kizayim. So then that means that she definitely ate hubby's to be kizayit as well. That wasn't canceled at all. And since you could be chayev malchus just on that neder, one full kizayit of a neder that asr the kizayit, and that hubby didn't cancel. So then she would get malchus. But if we view this as a single split personality, and that therefore each one of them is weakening the impact of the neder, once either daddy or hubby is mevatel the neder through giving his hafara, even if she eats both of those kizayim, she didn't eat a really usher kizayis. She only ate a half a personality's kizayis. Okay, so that's not mechayev. It's usher, but it's sort of like a chatzi shir, and it's not a full neder. Okay, so now what that means is, says the Ran, is that essentially we've introduced a new concept. The concept is weakening. And that is the Ran's basis for the description of this entire sugya as being built around weakening. So before we talk about the ideas that the sugya is going to be building on, let me point out the situational impact on how a hafara might be viewed. Oh, man, is there any way to be made for a mad hallucination of a shade standing over you at all times with a cup? And you understand how the imagination works. Is this the cup that was offered to Socrates? Is this the cup that is given of the Mayim Chaim? I mean, you never know. It might be the last cup. Okay. Is there any way to drink five of those and then get rid of the cup for the rest of this year? No, I thought not. Okay. So let's discuss some of the impact of this thing. Two people need to do hafara. So suppose one of them does hafara and the other one doesn't. Okay, so we just raise the question of whether that's a weakening or whether it's a splitting the personality into two. I understand. That's, we're going to see, ends up being a machlokas Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. But before we get to that machlokas, and before we have a solution to the question, we need to imagine certain circumstances. So let's talk about a case where one of the partners, either father or husband, knows about the neder, and the other one does not know about the neder. Now, in that case, do we still view the power of hafara as being equally distributed between the two of them? Or is the knowledge itself of both parties, since there is nothing that is given to either party before they hear about it, as the Pasuk said, B'yom Shamo, does the balance of power between the Av and the Baal change in the event that one knows and the other one doesn't know? Now, what would be the difference? The difference would be very important, because if the other party didn't find out about it, and dies before finding out about it, then we have a situation like this. The party that did know performed a hafara, and they performed a hafara that was more powerful than the standard hafara, because they were the only empowered party and were not sharing their ability to be mefer with anyone else at the time because no one else knew about it. So now, assuming that the concept of two people being mefer is essentially not that each one was given half, but rather that the presence of the other ones in her mind, right, of hafara, made this a neder of two components. And basically, if this is the case, then if there is a father, then I understand that you can't ignore the father. But if there is no father, so then you perhaps can ignore the father. Well, we know that if the father doesn't exist at all, we're going to see that the Baal cannot be made for it. So in other words, if the father dies and she makes a neder during the time of the Erisin, where there is only an Arus, and he doesn't need to come unto the father for being made for Bekodmi, what's the din? Well, an Arus, as we're going to see, requires a father in order to be mefer. So we can't say that he gets the entire right if there is no father. But the question is, if the father was there but didn't know about it, so then if he was mefer, that hafara was a kosher hafara, because as long as the father is there, he does not have to know at the time that I do the hafara, right? In that case, the Baal does have the rights of hafara, and his rights of hafara were not complete because the father hadn't done anything, but they were more powerful than a normal hafara because they were not a sharing of power. The father was not as yet empowered. Now, this is the Ran's chiddush. The Ran learns the entire sugya as revolving around a question of unequal distribution of powers, such that if both know about it, then they have an equal distribution of power, perhaps. We talked about that yesterday. Is the ikker the husband and the father could just get in the way? Is the ikkar the father and the husband could just get in a way? So we already raised this issue, right, of the distribution of power. That was yesterday's Gemara at the end of the sugya. The Gemara ended up showing that we can't look at it in either of those two ways. That's if both of them know about it. How about if one doesn't know about it? And that, says the Ran, is the issue that we're talking about over here, the main focus. So therefore, there's two ways of looking at this. In the event that one of them is Mefer and the other one never knew, and then the other one dies before being Mefer. So now let's examine what the implications of such a situation are. If we understand that the initial hafara is not complete only because of the presence of the other one's empowerment, so then you can think that if the father was the one who never knew and the father died and the Baal had been Mefer, is it possible that in that case the neder has been so weakened through the original hafara that since there is no father to bother the process, that the husband can now get rid of the small 20%, let's say, of the neder that remains? Or there's another way of looking at it. Supposing the person who did the hafara died. So now, in that case, the father, let's say the Baal does the hafara, he dies. We have a concept of nisrok no rishus l'baal, l'av. But nisrok no rishus l'av is going to be affected by the ability of the father to inherit the right from the Baal. And if the neder was already so weakened by a hafara that affected 80%, and now there's only 20% left, is that enough to give to the father? And we're going to see, this sounds again like mumbo-jumbo, but we're going to see that there's a machlokes Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel about precisely this question, that in the event that the neder was weakened, would we still say nitrok no reshus la'av? Or does a neder have to be fully there in order for it to be nitrok no reshus la'av? So if you hold like the shita that says that it was merely weakened, then that would mean that the father cannot be yoreshit from the Baal. And if the Baal would die, then he won't get the reshus to individually be able to be made for this neder. So there's two opposite ways in which the knowledge of the other partner can affect the entire future of the dinim of hafara. One is where the person who does the hafara is alive and the other partner died before hearing about it. In that case, since the partner who did the hafara is alive, there is no change in the status of that hafara, and therefore, perhaps he could go now and take care of the little bit of the neder that's left all on his own. But there's the opposite situation, where the neder was weakened, and now the question is, the one who did the hafara died, and can we give that little piece that's left to the other partner, even if that partner is the av, or is he not going to be able to be yoreshit? So thinking about the different ways in which the partial hafara is active gives us an insight into the following five cases. Now, we're going to have five cases, all of which are part of what we're trying to do, namely to bring a solution to the question of whether Megiz Gaiz on the one hand or Miklash Kolish on the other hand. So let's take a look at what the five cases are, and then we'll finally get to an understanding that the question of Megiz Gaiz or Miklash Kolish is a machlokas Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. So we need to have a little bit of patience until we get to the Raya, because the Raya is only from the fifth case. But we're going to go through all five cases, which will give us an insight into the mechanisms. So Tashma. So we have a Braita. Now this Braita is an expansion of the Mishnah that we're going to have day after tomorrow about a case of a Nara Murasa. And as we said, that if the father dies, then lo nitrok no reshus l'baal. If the Baal dies, nitrok no reshus l'av. So now this Braisa wants to show us all of the variations and gives us five variations. So Toshma. Eima tayamru, says the Braisa. When does the Mishnah say that if the Baal dies, that then nitrok no reshus l'av? Well, that would be in any of the following cases. A, Bisman shelo shama baal kodem shiyamut. Could be talking about a case where the baal never heard about it at all. Nitrokna rishut la'ab. It could be in a case where he did hear about it, and he was actually mefer, who would still be nitrokna rishut la'ab. It could be talking about a case where the baal heard about it, and he didn't say anything about it, so he was not mefer, he was shatak, but he died on the same day. So if he died on the same day, his shtika is not the equivalent of a hakama. If he was mekim, then he really messed things up if he died after he was mekim. But in this case, he wasn't mekim. So in any of those cases, any or all of those cases, Zoe Sheshanina, Meitabal Nitrokno Rishut La'at. That's where we say in the Mishnah that then the father gets complete rishus over that neder and he is able to cancel it. Okay. That's case number one. In, however, a case where, this is still now explaining that the Mishnah was not referring to a case where the Baal was Shomea, but he was actually Mekayimit, or he did the equivalent of actually being Mekayimit by being Shatak and then putting off dying till the next day. Well, if he didn't die until the next day, then his Shetika is a Kiyum. So in the event that the husband was actually Mekayimit either actively or passively, so a passive Kiyum would be Shetika for the entire remainder of the day, as we're going to see, so then the father cannot be made for anymore, because once the Oros was make him, there's no way that the father has rishus to be made for. Okay, that was case number one. Now let's talk about case number two, which is the opposite, where the father's rights do not go lo nitrokna rishut labal. So this would be the father hears and was mefer, and the Baal didn't even hear about it until the father died. Zoi sheshaninu meitav lo nitrokna rishut labal. So in this case, which it doesn't really seem to be important here in this case to mention that he never heard about it, who cares whether the Baal did hear about it or didn't hear about it, that we're going to have to see what the chiddush is. It doesn't seem to really matter, but in this case, the halacha would be that if the father died, lo nitrokna rishut labal, it does not go back to the Baal. What difference does it make to us whether he had heard about it or not heard about it, that what the Baal didn't hear about it before the death? Is that a chiddush? Says the Ron, yes, that is a very important chiddush. Because as we saw, and we're going to see where we know this from, as we saw, until a partner hears about, either the Av or the Baal, hears about the neder, he is not as yet empowered to do anything about this neder, and therefore he is not yet a partner. So suppose the Bright had given us a case where the Baal doesn't have the rights to be mefer if the father had done the hafara and he died, I might have thought that that's only because of the fact that the Baal had heard about it, and therefore he was also an equal partner with the father. Who cares? I care. Because if he was an equal partner with the father, then the father only had a 50% power over the right of hafara. So I understand. I cannot give that right to the Baal, and the Baal doesn't inherit anything from the father. But how about in a case where the husband never heard about it? Then what was the rishus of the Av? Oh, then the rishus of the Av was much bigger, because there was no Baal in the way, because the Baal had never heard about it. So in that case, when the father was mefer, he was made for, let's say, 85% of the neder. Now, what's left is just the part that the Baal had not been made for yet. Just so that when he does find out about it, I'd say, look, this neder is 85% kaput, because you didn't even know about it the time that the father did it. We don't need nitrokna rishus labal. there's so little of the netter left, just go ahead and say you don't want the netter. And heck, for a 15% netter, we could use a 15% power of a crummy Aorus, and that would be enough, I would think. So it's a bigger chiddush to say that he didn't know about it. Not because of him, but because of the impact that his not knowing would have on the father's afara, you see? So if the partner, didn't get in the way because he wasn't empowered yet, and the father had done afara before he died, then maybe we do not need nitrok nereshus labal, which can't happen anyway, in order for him to be able to do his afara. There's so little netter left. It's such a badly weakened netter. It's barely surviving out there. All it takes is the remaining keach of an oros to be able to do it on his own without needing the father's presence. So that's a bigger chiddush than a case where he did know about it. Okay? So if a case he did know about it, I mean, that has nothing to do with him, but it changes the father's afara. Then the father was only made for 50%. So now that means that the Baal, the Oros, has got to get a lot of power to take care of a 50% netter, and he can only get that power from the father, but we don't say Nisroch and Rosh Hashanah Baal. Okay, is this clear? Let's get each step clear on its own. Okay, so the impact of the other partner knowing is important in determining what the partner who did know achieved in his afara. Fine, that's an important nakuna. So therefore, this is a bigger chiddush, says the Ram. And he says this in a very fireside chat kind of language. You know, I've seen what a lot of those who come before me said about this, and they claim it doesn't make any difference, really, whether you knew about it, you don't know about it. I personally find that very difficult to believe. Let me tell you how I see it. That's his language. Let me tell you how I see it. And then he introduces his expanded concept of the interrelationship of powers in Afar. Okay, all of which he says, look, I know it sounds like mumbo-jumbo, but remember at the end of the sugya, we're going to find out that you cannot give over the rights of a netter that's been weakened to a father. So I'm not making this up. This is basically the way the Gemara is going to come out in the Machlokas Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel later on. So don't get angry at me. Okay, so this was what we had over here. Situation number one. Situation number two was in the case where the father heard about it, the father was Mefer, and the Baal didn't hear about it. So as we said, you would have thought that over there you do not need Nitrok na Rishus Labal. The Chiddush is, you still need Nitrok na Rishus Labal. And the reason that you still need Nitrok na Rishus Labal, now we're going to see that this is very meduyak in the Lashon to come. I don't want to prove it yet, but keep it in mind. The reason that we say that the husband cannot do it is because, and this turns out to be the subtle language that this Bryce is giving, the reason that the husband can't do it is not because a husband cannot be made for a 15% netter all on his own. He can. The reason he cannot do it in this case is because he cannot inherit the rights from the dead father. What does that mean? He doesn't need to inherit the debt. I thought the whole point was that he was left with a 15% weakened netter. The chiddush here is that the father's hafara disappears with the father's death. That's the chiddush. And that therefore, this is an entirely new idea, that the hafara is a function of the da'at that is mitnagedet to the virtual reality of another person's da'at. But if that da'at is dead, that consciousness no longer impacts the question of the netter in the imagination of his daughter. And therefore, it isn't true that you're only left with a 15% netter. The moment that the contracting consciousness is gone, you're left with the whole netter as it was. So you'll say, okay, so can he not inherit Nitrok na Rishus to the Baal? No. We never say Nitrok na Rishus Labal. We only have a basis to say Nitrok na Rishus La'av from the fact that it says Im Hayoti Yeh, which tells us there could be multiple Erisin, and each time in the middle, things go back to the way they were. you see, but not in the other direction. These are subtle points. It's really important to hear each one of them to catch the full beauty of the sugya. The sugya is poetic, but you must catch these little details, because otherwise you're going to be left with a nursery rhyme instead of a Bach cantos. I mean, come on. So you want to put in the work to hear the detail, right? Okay. Now, let's take another example. And this is the third example. Let's take a case where the husband does hear and the husband is Mefer, but the father didn't hear and died, and the husband died before he ever heard about it. So, lo yispik av lishma ad shemet habaal. Okay. So in this case, what happens? In this case, we have a very weakened neder, because in this case, Baal managed to be made for 85%, leaving daddy 15%. And the big chiddush is, again, according to the Ran, that even though daddy was only left 15%, and you'd say, 15% netters are not enough to even give over Beirush, as we'll see later on in the Machlokas Pechame Beit Hillel. So maybe in that case, there's nothing to do. No. Zoe Shishaninu Metabal Nitrok Narishislav. On the contrary, this is the point of telling us that it can go back to the father. Now you'll say, I mean, but wasn't that the very first case? It said, in the very first case, what was case number one? That if the Baal had been actually made for the neder and then he died, it goes to the father. So why don't I get it? So what's the chiddush? Oh, the chiddush is that in this case, the father didn't hear about it. And that means that if one partner doesn't hear about it, it vastly increases the power of the single partner that did do the hafara, in this case, the Baal, did do the hafara, and his hafara is a super hafara, which manages to get rid of 85% of the neder. And therefore, I might have thought that in this case, we can't give the rishus to the Baal, to the husband afterwards, because he'll have to be Mayfair only 15%. How's he going to get that 15%? Comes along, therefore, the Brisa to tell me, nonetheless, he does get it. But why does he get it? Because Nitrokan Rishit La'av. And why do we need Nitrokan Rishit La'av? Because the Baal died. And if the Baal died, then we don't have the contraindicating consciousness on the part of the Baal. And therefore, we're left with the whole matter. And that's the chiddush, that in that event, we can still utilize the nitrokna harishut la'av. So again, this sounds like the case that we had before, that if the Baal was mefer, but it's very different, because in this case, the father didn't even hear about it. And that gufa is the chiddush. Now, there's a tzad to say that it should be less of a chiddush, because again, we say, well, if it's a weakened neder, it's easier for the father to do it, right? That's what we said before. But as the Ran points out, there are two opposite effects of a situation where a person knows about it. One effect is that the remaining person has a stronger ability to be mefer, and he does a super hafara. But the other effect is that there's not enough left to be able to give over to the other party, which would mean that you cannot do it nitrokna. So therefore, says the Ran, it's true that on the one hand, we just use the opposites for us. So, but so what? We need to know both of these things. In other words, both of these situations are a chiddush. Because one side of it is that we have a weakened neder, and that would make it easier to be mefer without saying nitrokna. The other way of looking at it is, if something is so weak and it requires nisrokna, maybe you can't be merokane just at 15% netters, we're going to see in the Machlokas Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Therefore, the Braisa has to tell us that even over here, it goes back to the Av. And the reason that it goes back to the Av is actually the same idea that we had before. It goes to the Av because the Baal died. And in an event that the person who does the Hafara dies, the Hafara disappears. So therefore, in that sense, it's not the question that the father can actually be Mevatel, a cheapo netter that only has a 15%. The Chiddush is Davka, that he gets the entire right to do it all by himself. Okay. Now let's talk about the fourth example in the Braita. The fourth example in the Braita goes like this. The husband heard about it. The husband did hafara, and the father did not hear about it and died. Okay. So now in this case, we're not talking about where the person who did the hafara died and therefore his hafara was batal. Oh. So in this case, we're talking about remaining with the 15% netter after the other partner disappears. Is that enough for me to be mefer? Now note the fascinating change in language. The change in language is not lo nisrok nerishus labal. No, it's a completely different concept. Ein habal yachol hafer. Why? Not because lo nisrok nerishus, but because ein habal mefer ela b'shutafut. A completely new idea. As we've explained before, a 15% netter is anyway not going to be nisrokna in either direction. And the fact is, it doesn't need to be nisrokna. Because since the original hafara was a super hafara, because the father never knew about it, and it is still intact because the husband did not die, the father died, it leaves the husband with just 15% of a netter, which you would think that even a weakened orus would be able to take away. And you'd be right, except for one terrible, inconvenient fact. And that fact is, it's a given in the pasuk that the orus only has the right to be mefer with the shutafut of the father. And since in this case the father died before providing anything to that shutafut, I don't give a hang if there's only 1% of the netter left. There's nothing that the orus can do all on his own. So that means we've been discussing cases where death cancels the hafara. We've been discussing the case where the absence of the other partner increases the power of that hafara. We've been discussing cases where death even enhances the power of the one who did the hafara. And then the difference would be a orus can only be in any way made for a neder in the presence of a father's life. But a father can actually be mefer with or without the orus in the event that there is no orus. Because then either because nisrok, nerishus la'av, if the neder isn't weakened, or because we don't even need nisrok, nerishus la'av, if the neder was weakened. So far, we haven't seen a case where the neder was weakened. Because in the end, since it entailed the death of the partner who did the hafara, then that hafara was canceled. It's the cup again. The nightmarish cup. What an image. Why don't you paint the devil's face on the cup, for heaven's sakes?
Angel, let's reverse that psychology.
If I believed it, I would drink more often.
The Tal of Tchias HaMeisim, the Malachim brought.
You know what the Gemara says. Dom Yalai Ke'arie Arbe. You look like a crouching lion to me. All right, so far we have not yet engaged the question. We finally get to case number 5. And now we can engage the question. Here's case number 5. Suppose Shama Avia Veferla. Daddy hears about it. And daddy lives. And he does a hafara before the hubby even heard about it. Ah, so now. Do we need nitrok narishus la'aba? No. Chozer ha'av umefer chelko shobal. In this case, we don't even need the idea of nitrok narishus la'aba, because all he needs to do is take care of a crummy 15% remaining netter, and that he can do. Says Rabbi Nassim, wait. This is true according to Beit Shammai. They're the ones who say that the father is able to take care of that last 15%. Beis Hillel holds that the father would only be able to take care of the 15% if he's given over the full rights of taking care of this netter on his own. Because what do you mean only the husband needs a partnership? Father also needs a partnership. He doesn't have a partner. The husband died. So you'll say, ah, but it says ima yotiye, it goes back to daddy. Oh, true. But going back to daddy means that it has to go back to daddy, meaning that I'm transferring back to daddy something that had been taken away from daddy. Okay, so in this case, I need to transfer back the rights of the hafara to the father. The hafara of what? The rights of hafara of a 15% crummy netter? That's not enough to be able to transfer back. It's been weakened. It's like trying to be paid a hegdash where the hegdash is no longer fully chal. It's kolish. It's too weak to be teifes its pidyon. In this case, it's too weak to be transferred back to the father. So what are they arguing about? This question! Ha-ha! Shmamina, according to Beit Shammai, it can be given back. Why? Because whatever one of the partner does is cutting away that piece. But the other piece remains intact. And if the other piece remains intact, now you were unaffected by the other one's hafara. So in other words, when the father went ahead and he did hafara, okay, his part is totally mutter. What about the baal's part? Totally usher. Enough to be mechayev you malchus. So what was weakened? Nothing was weakened. And if nothing was weakened, then nitrok narishut la'av. But according to Beit Hillel, everything was weakened. Miklach Kolish. Now, once Beit Hillel opens up this doorway to the idea of a weakened netter, so then he says, well, a weakened netter cannot be given back to the father, which is the Ran's entire point throughout the sugya. There is a concept called weakened, which was raised by the original question of Miklach Kolish, and therefore, we have this tremendous chiddush over here. Obviously, in the cases that we had before, we were talking about this death, the death of the baal or the death of the husband over there. There was nothing weakened at all. Why? Because when he died, his hafara was completely batal. Here's the only case that we have that the weakening remains intact, according to Beis Hillel, because he never died. And therefore, we can't say it went back to being strong. How did it go back to being strong? And since the father was the one who had substantially weakened it, that is still around. But what the husband had done is, I don't know, the 15% left. We can't give that back to the father. Therefore, Shmamina, Lebeit Shammai, Miges Gaiz, Lebeit Hillel, Miklash Kolish, Shmamina, this is indeed a correct interpretation of the Machlokas Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, and therefore, in a case where we had the question, an Arusa makes a neder, ossering two olives on herself, each one happened to be a real olive, not a Chazanish olive, and it was itself. There's other kinds of virtual olives, right? But it was itself precisely the shear. So if you go ahead and you take off one, there would still be a chiev on the other one. And that's Beit Shammai's approach, that each one exists as an intact netter until the other half of the personality goes ahead and is made for it. So therefore you would be chayiv. Vashein ken, according to Beit Hillel, even if you ate both of it, you still ate a very weakened iser that lost its ability to give you malchus. And therefore, even though it would be usher, there would be no chiyuv of malchus. And that concludes the issue, which itself was only a brilliant way of opening the door to understanding the strange interrelationship between split minds and virtuality. And that concludes our raya for the day. I'm sure you'll have a wonderful time reading through the symphonic runs on the side. They might be a little run-on runs. Maybe that's why it's called run. I'm sure Barnea would agree to that. There is a sort of a tendency to be run-on. The run likes to explain things very well. And
you have to do a rundown.
And he does.